Impro Mafia presents And Time!
Welcome to And Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's resident tech guy and designer.
And I'm Greg Rowotham, one of the Brisbane's long-time running improvisers.
Indeed, running like a train.
You can't be stopped.
So, there hasn't really been a lot going on in the world of impro in the last 4 days.
No, not the last one. No, not the 4 days at all.
Since we did the last one with Nat.
There's always so much to talk about. Impro is a full and exciting world.
Indeed. And if there's not, we just make it up.
That's right. That's very good. Very clever. You must improvise.
What's gone on since then? Well, the first podcast went live.
Oh.
But of course, that couldn't have happened before last week.
No, because that would be in the first podcast.
Yes.
It would be time travel.
That's a very meta subject.
Is that think about this in thousands of years' time, they might find this on a USB stick somewhere and go, what can we glean from civilization in the early 21st century before they wiped themselves out or went to the stars and became gods? You pick it.
I'd like to think that our technology would last that long, but I don't think it does. I've tried plugging one of those USB sticks into a computer and ejecting it without actually hitting the eject button, and it just wipes the file structure.
You know, I'm bad. I'm one of those people who just gleefully just destroys everything, just pulls it straight out. I've never, ever pressed the stop button. And everyone goes, oh my God, you can't do that. You'll wreck it. And I've never pressed the button any other way. I've only just gone, yank, and never had a moment's problem with it. What? Mm. Why is that? Is it all building up? Is it like computer karma? Is it going to destroy me one day? One day my kidney will just go,
no, I think it just unloaded onto me.
Oh, that's right.
The only time I've ever ejected those things without ejecting them properly, and the whole file structure goes,
you hear that, world? All the bad karma goes to Dan. Do what you like.
Yes. I'm not a big fan of that. Well, I saw some footage this morning of last year's festival on camera.
Iron Improviser.
Yeah. No, the Briz Improv
right,
Fest.
That festival. Yes.
Last year. So I was very excited. I don't usually see video of myself doing improv. The first time I did it, someone popped it on and I got all tense. And then I'm like, wait a second. This guy's pretty funny. This guy's hysterical. Oh, wait. No, don't stand like that. You look gay. No, don't stand like that. Oh, God, no. Oh, God, is that what I look like?
I must admit, the only time I've ever seen myself act on camera was a movie I did for a company a long time ago, an amateur thing, but like you had to film overnight. And even then, I'm terrified. It's not that I did it badly. It was just that I went, I look like that. I sound like that. Who the hell is that? I didn't realize it was me. It's just,
why are my friends friends with that guy? That's right.
He hasn't got that sexy timbre I can hear in my head, you see. That vibrates in my body. Like, oh, yes. I got a Clark Gable quality to my voice in my head, but everyone else, I sound like a squirrel, so it's not good.
The thing I found the most surprising looking at the videos this morning was that I was looking back at one that I was in, and I couldn't figure out why I'd been edited together to go into promotion stuff, because I remember being in that scene and for the entire scene going, oh my God, nothing is happening. This is a horrible, horrible scene. And everyone wants it off stage immediately. Why won't any of us do anything? And I watched it back and I'm like, these guys are clever ass. And it was odd because for the year since I've done it, I always knew that it was a terrible, terrible scene. But then watching it back, it was fine.
Yeah.
Really entertaining.
Impro, for me, anyway, when you're saying about things being horrible, when you're in the moment, 4-minute scenes, 2-minute scenes just go on forever. And that can be really good if it's a great scene and fun. And you're going, wow, I just had the best month of my life on stage. Or, of course, you can go, an entire lifetime just passed me sucking hard or it dying horrifically. So everything, your heightened senses, you always feel that everything's a lot worse or a lot better than it actually was. I think it's very hard to get an objective view. When you're on stage, you come off going, I am a genius or I am a filthy animal. And there's no in between, I find.
With that, it brings us to our subject this week.
Oh, yes.
Which is the rather negative notion.
Bringing on Greg and the negativity.
How to get out of improv.
It's not so much how to get out of, not from my point of view. It's sometimes you have to be aware, and some people might not understand this who listen to this, but sometimes improv becomes, well, you don't want to do it anymore. It loses its gleam. It's not the shiny, shiny diamond that it used to be. And I think this should be looked at. I think it's why it's not shiny and what you should do. Because I went through that. Dear listeners, I went through that for 3 years. I was only improvising for about, getting close to 5 years, and I gave up for 3. I've only just recently come back, and I'm enjoying it again, but I stopped. And I mean totally stopped. I don't mean I stopped but came and watched every show or only played once a month or something stopped. I mean dead. No one saw me, didn't talk to anyone, just didn't do it. because I was bored. And I realized it's something we've got to accept. We've got to look at and say, why did I become bored? Well, a lot was in me, but also because if you do the same shtick, and that's yourself and the troop that you're part of, troop, as Wade says, makes it sound like monkeys, the troop that you're part of does the same thing over and over again and doesn't evolve or doesn't expand or doesn't try and do something different, then in the end, well, I got bored. I got very bored with it.
Mm. And it's such a come down, because when I don't know about anyone else, but when I first started doing improv, it was like these golden gates had opened up to me, and suddenly there was something totally interesting and engaging to do in life.
That's right.
I've always been the sort to get sort of keen on something and then give it up a few months later. So there are very few things that I've sort of stuck with for as long, but then I got into impro, and it's one of those things that just seems so easy and yet so satisfying for so long. And I did it for...
It can be as easy as you want it to be. I mean, if you get really good, it can't be. It's not easy. I think it's a dangerous thing to say. It's not. I think this is where we fall down a lot again, just to come in sideways here. We have a habit of going, oh, it's easy. And it's, you go, well, it's easy to learn. As in, it's easy to learn to drive a car. But trust me, just because you've got your driver's license doesn't make you a good driver. It means you can now have the basic skill to drive that vehicle.
Are you implying that people in Queensland Transport are allowing people onto our roads who are not wholeheartedly effective manipulators of automobiles?
I think that they're competent, and same as improvisers of all stripes. And I think we have to accept the fact that a lot of the time, people who don't want to work at it in any way, shape, or form will only ever remain competent. And competent is good, if that makes sense. Competent's okay. You can play a show with competent people, but you can't therefore say, oh, I've been doing it for... It's not time. I think that's what I'm trying to say here. It's not just because you've been doing it for 4 years or 2 years or 2 months. Really doesn't matter if you don't push yourself and try something new and listen to when people go, oh, that was good, but maybe you should have tried X, or wow, you really do that screaming president character a lot, you know, whatever it is. You've got to listen, and you have to trust someone, I think. Improvise. Here's a secret. Find someone you trust, dear listener, and listen to them, because then you become a better improviser. Right.
And then find someone who trusts you, and then screw them over.
Oh, that's right.
Because it'll be really easy, which is obviously the path that I like to go down.
Suddenly the bad karma. Oh, look, his USB exploded.
So this is about... This is more so about, not so much about quitting as a player, but it's about developing as a player.
Yes, we have gone sideways.
Because when I started, I was so wrapped up in being able to make the audience laugh with a particular witty line. And that where I came from. Somehow I ended up with the moniker of the gagger. Like, in impro, you're not supposed to tell gags. You're not supposed to do jokes. And somewhere along the line, I fell into the mold, and everyone saw that I was that guy.
But everyone, I mean, let's face it, everyone thinks that everyone else is doing it wrong. you're doing it right. Even if you're not doing it right, it's a rare person I've met who says, oh, yeah, I'm all right. Or even better, I do this well, but do that badly. Most improvisers say, oh, I'm okay, or I'm... Because most improvisers are people. No, all improvisers I've met so far are people, except for the aliens. And
they're generally the best ones.
They're true.
Fucking aliens.
Because they haven't got all this kind of human culture they have to rely on. They just come in there and do pure improv.
Well, they learned all of their human culture from TV. So all those games that are like, you know,
and also
do Paris Hilton.
And if you think Loose Moose is a good company to learn from, you should go to Centauri Prime and learn from the improv. Wow. Those guys are amazing. Anyway, that's how you go. That's how you become a better improviser. Go into space. Okay, that's it. And time. No. Yeah, so getting better. Going back to what we were saying before about stopping, I think if you're part of a loose affiliation of players, as in if you're not in a close-knit group, if it's just a governing body who runs it and you come and play, but you're not really invested in it, which happens a lot, I mean, it happens, then you can become bored very quickly, and because it's not catered for you, or it's not catering, it's like a job. You do a job and you're bored with that job, then you probably want to leave that job. If there's no career advancement for that job, and that's not even, I don't mean getting better or being paid more, like, oh, you become the boss, or you become an improviser, like you become the professional improviser. Ooh. No, I'm not talking about that, but if there's no way you can go sideways, or there's no skill path you can travel down. Okay, I'll give you an example. I like long form. I really like long form. I find short games, hoop games, get on my goat, to be honest, perfectly honest, because there was none of that happening when I was finishing up, and another reason as well, that was a big one, I left, because I went, well, I can get up there and say a word at a time until my head falls off, and I don't enjoy it. It's the same gag every time. It's the hoop. To not to be able to have my needs catered for, but of course, as I grew up, I realized, well, why don't I cater for my own needs? And that's someone very clever, Deborah Frances White, sent me the name dropping there, Spontaneity Shop, said, well, why...
That's right, Nat, dropped the same name.
It's the only name we know. So I'm going to say Tom Selinsky. Tom, this one's for you.
I think that Patty Styles, who I met, actually trained them.
Yes, that's nice, It's all good.
She didn't think much of them, if I remember correctly.
they're the only people I know who actually make money out of it. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. She said, well, stop waiting for other people to do it and do it yourself. And I went, I will. I never did. But because it took me, I was in a bad place and with Impro, and now I'm back and doing it and really enjoying it. But there's now with Impro Mafia, especially seeing this is Impro Mafia's podcast, I can say it, Impro Mafia is in a position now where you have different shows running. So you have the Arts Theatre and you have the Stage Door Theatre, and there are other things which we cannot talk about at this point happening. So I've been told. That's right. Tune in next week when you hear what Greg was crapping on about. Or probably not. Things I've only heard of the grapevine. So I'm not an echelon member of Impro. I'm just a fee-paying...
Just dating one.
I'm fee-paying folks. Yeah. Well, it's a pillow tour. How romantic.
Do you know I've got a venue for you to fill?
Death in a minute. Petite mort in a minute. No. Stop. That's just wrong. So it's... Yeah, the things you hear about. And what I'm trying to... I'm totally off track here. What I'm trying to say is that each venue now caters to something different. You've got Arts Theatre is going to become less pub-like. Stage Door is a bit more pub-like. I'm doing the inverted commas singers thing. I keep thinking I'm on television. So I've just done the rabbit ears. As in, you can be more naughty at Stage Door and the audience go, oh, he said bum. And you go, hooray. And
that's what we paid our $11 for.
And they absolutely go berserk for it. That's the thing. And then other venues will cater for different things. And you've got festival coming.
Yeah.
In August. July. Sorry,
July.
Check impromafia.com for that. Everyone should go immediately. And it's going to be people from all over the world doing different things. And this is where I've regained my interest in Impro, to see it done differently and different people trying different things.
Mm-hmm.
Edge Improv, Barry Daniels and Edge, they do the It Came From Somewhere Else or the It's thing.
Yeah.
And I honestly think, and I've said this to many people, I think that's the best format I've ever seen. Only because it opens itself up to everything. Absolutely everything. He can do anything he wants on that stage under one banner. He can run science fiction and romance, and he can run murder mysteries, and it's all under the same banner, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to see. And so this is something he's developed, a new thing, and it's something that we all have to do, I think.
Mm. I left once. A couple of times, actually. Although the first time I didn't mean to. First time I moved to Townsville some girly. And I was just getting to that point where I was really starting to feel a bit confident with my playing, and then I was like, oh, well, now I'm going to be out of it, and I'm not going to be getting better and better.
Mm.
And then it all stopped in Brisbane anyway, so I managed to get away.
So does Townsville have Impro?
It doesn't, or it didn't. Mm. It does have a little bit now going on. But when I was up there, I met this American girl, and she and I were both excited about Impro, and so we ran a little beginner's class up there.
Oh, cool.
And she'd learned Impro completely different to how I'd learned it.
How can you do it differently? Completely different.
Okay. She explained the game Stunt Doubles. Now, for the listeners out there, Stunt Doubles is a game where there are two actors on stage doing a scene using their voice, mostly. And then there'll be a call for Stunt Doubles, and they'll jump off stage, and two other people will jump on stage and do some sort of massive action-based action thing. And then they'll call for actors, and then they'll jump back, and the other two people are doing the quiet chatting and moving stuff along. So there's two people for action and two people for moving plot along.
Mm.
And someone said, when after a massive action has been done, do you take off where that ends? And the American girl running it said, no, you just ignore what they've done completely. That's where the comedy is.
Oh, wow. Okay, that is different.
And that was the point where every muscle in my body like slammed shut. And I went, I've made a horrible mistake.
that's a different way. I can give an example, one that it's one of those names. I hate using the name now, and I always promise never to, but I can't explain it without it. So Harold. The horror of Harold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because Harold is horrible, but because we were taught a long time ago by a nice Canadian fellow who came. I can't remember his name anymore. No, it was Cliff. He was just a player. He wasn't a guru guy. If you're listening, Cliff, we loved you. But I'm
sure you better now.
It wasn't like he was bad. He taught Harold in a certain way, and we'd never heard of it before. And a Harold is a way, listeners, of doing like a long form, but you build up scenes by scene, and you start putting bits and pieces in. I'm not going to go into the whole thing because, to be honest, I never particularly understood the way he did it, and it always confused me from that day. Other people picked up on it. I think Edge through Harold's that way. They got it, so they grokked it, where I never did.
Yeah, Brad's a massive fan of the Harold format.
And that format, though. He really liked that format. Yeah. And that's the thing. Sorry, you're interrupting.
There's a lot of people in Sydney and Melbourne who are totally captivated with it, too. And in fact, the biggest impro show I saw when I was over in Canada was a Harold.
That style of Harold?
The kind that Brad does now.
Right, okay. So it always confused me, and it always seemed very forced to me. That was always my problem with it. It was like, as improvisers, we're being forced down a path, and I never liked it. And I could never see the point to it. And so I never did it. I was like, well, you know, because that sounds defeatist, listeners. That wasn't like quick decision there. It wasn't like, oh, I'm not doing it. It's like, after many months, but no, I'm not going to bother because I don't see the fun in it and I'm doing it for fun. But then I, once again, the spontaneity shop, when we told them how they did it, they went, oh, yeah, well, that's one way of doing it. And it was that moment of, what do you mean it's one way of doing it? And they went, well, it's just one way of doing it. Throw the rules out the window, as Keith Johnson says. Throw the goddamn rules out the window. And they go, oh, yeah. Because we all got caught up, I got caught up in this big problem of, that's the way it has to be. That's the way I've learned it. Therefore, you go, well, no, it's just a way of doing short scenes that run into longer scenes. And you can really, really open that sucker up and just have little bits and little bits and little bits. And you don't have to have things coming back. And if scenes just die, they just, you know, it's kind of like rewarding and punishing behaviors in animals. Like, you reward an animal for a behavior and the little rat keeps pressing the lever. If you don't reward it, then in the end, the behavior extinguishes. Extinction of the behavior. Same with these scenes. If this makes any sense. And so you get
that's
these...
right, I'll just edit it out. I'll edit all the words separately and put them in the order that they do make sense.
Fantastic, that's good. My God, I sound like I'm knowing something. So what I want to say is the Harold can be done in many different ways. And once you know that, once you learn you can change the rules, like your Townsville friend, you can change things quite well, but it has to make sense on why you're changing them and what you're trying to get at. What's the core of this? Don't be slaves to the rules and slaves to the hoops, because once you're slaves to the rules and slaves to the hoops, basically your story will always suffer if you go, oh, I must have a death in a minute, or I must put a marshmallow in my mouth, or these are funny as hell things to watch. But at the end of the day, if you're there for the story, and now, but honest, I can watch stuff on stage and go, oh, you know, it was fun, but really didn't get to me, didn't affect me in any way.
Yeah, I try to avoid rostering on games like that when I'm emceeing. I generally put maybe 3 hoop games in because I know that some people will notice if I don't. But I...
You know who you are. No.
I can't stand teenage endowments.
I hate endowments. Anyway. I love you, Dad. No.
I like playing party endowments, but okay. I think that's the selfish part of me, because I get to have like my little moment in the sun where I'm doing my little mime and my doing, my little joke.
Teenage endowments for me is just boring because... invariably starts with the teenager climbing through the goddamn window. And we must have seen it once 7 years ago. Some genius, you know who you are, stepped through the window for the first time, and then we've all copied this entrance, and it's just... and 2 parents always waiting, and they always flick the light on, they always like, where have you been? You can always script the damn thing, and it's impro, and that's not how it should be. Mm. And even when you break that mold, am I sounding very negative? I don't know. I sound like I'm crapping on things.
I think that's going to be the theme of these podcasts.
I'm really sorry about that. I'm not negative at all, really. I mean, I'm back doing it, and I'm enjoying it, and so I'm not negative. It's just these things. You pick up why.
You get passionate about the things that are wrong, not the things that are right.
Oh, hey, you want to talk about things that are right? I can talk about things that are right.
Oh, no, let's keep going. Because I fucking hate teenage endowments, and I am happy to bitch about that stupid game.
Damn those games.
Because it's the same, as you said, it's the same game each time, and it doesn't have to be. No. Why does it have to be teenagers? Mm. Why does it have to be parents?
Yeah.
Could be non-endowments, for God's sake.
But you say that, and it confuses people. It's okay. Look, hoops games are fine. Hoop games, but you got to remember, a lot of these games were designed as training games. And they were never meant to be for stage, honestly. Beyond maybe a theatre sports, as in a theatre sports TM kind of show.
Well, yeah,
but we've done is taken them for and used them forever.
Yeah, I mean, these games, I think games are really good for beginners' shows.
Mm.
Because at least when they're thinking about saying I love you to another character in an I love you scene, there's at least going to be one moment where they're actually expressing some sort of emotional intensity, which hopefully they will learn from.
Do you find, though, that in I love you scenes... once again, negative. You always find that all the improvisers, because they're desperate to find their new angle, they won't just be in love, like 2 people in love. It always has to be a wacky reason why they're in love. It's always he reads it in a ransom note. You must read, I love you, or I'll kill your father. Oh, I have to say this, I love you. Or it's said to the dog, or it's always not the, it's not the most obvious thing. You want two human beings, man and a woman, two men, two women, it doesn't make any difference. Saying they love
each other.
They love each other.
If it's a man saying I love you to a man on an impro stage, they're going to end up making out. Well, it makes a difference.
Well, this is Wade's fault. It's not me at all. That's right. Thank you, Wade. Thank you.
Moo.
That's right. Don't tell Natalie. I'm stuck in a room here with you. No,
yeah, we're both in the closet at Greg's place.
Actually, we are, yes. But the audience want to see, if you see a young man and a young woman on stage and they're, you know, in love or whatever, that's a scene. The audience wants to see the obvious thing. It's really funny. We always think that it's the inobvious thing that they want to see, or won't it be great if I break the reality and suddenly aliens come from outer dimensions and appear from his colon and scream. No, the audience might laugh once, and then after that they go, oh, you can't seem to connect to real stories, you can't seem to do anything that doesn't require strangeness.
Well, the problem is that there's a certain sense of safety in using that pivotal moment to be the pivotal moment in the story. So I mean, I've enjoyed doing some quirky I love you scenes which involve a guy saying I love you to another guy who doesn't expect it. Like, that way the other person can have a strong reaction to that sort of thing, which is a good way of doing it. But if you were to do a scene with a guy and a girl who are obviously in love with each other, and one guy said, I love you, then there's a certain sense to use that as the pivotal moment for the other girl to go, actually, we need to talk.
Yeah, or, but of course, yes. That's a platform tilt.
So if you just go, I love you, and the other person goes, thank you, I love you too.
Yep.
Then you've got to find where you're still got to find where your tilt is.
This is the other problem with these things. I love you scenes, death in a minute, and that sort of stuff. You bridge. You might as well call it the giant bridging scene, because the audience know what they're going to get, and you go, wow, this is going to go for a minute, and all I'm going to see is nothing. So sometimes that means people come out in death in a minute and just die, and that's fun. That can be done. That's an interesting way of trying it, but it's got to have a reason. And sometimes I think it's a bit of bastard impro to step up and just collapse on stage. That can be funny. Not even funny. It all depends, are your teammates ready for it? And if they go, wow, we really had nothing, and now you just dropped dead, then they really, you've just pretty much said, I will not help you anymore. I've become a prop and a plot point, but that's all I am there. So, these are all useful games, but you've got to understand that the audience is there to watch what you do. And the other thing is you've got to do things with energy. Energy, damn it. That's just me. That's another thing.
So you actually got to a point where you decided that, yes, you're ready to come back to impro. And I've seen a lot of people who haven't done that. Troy Baker, most notoriously, sort of finished impro. And went, you know what I like? World of Warcraft. 18 hours a day.
And his lovely woman, let's face it. Yeah, that's true. Some people don't come back. That's right. Some people, for many different reasons.
So
yeah.
you obviously had a point where you're like, that's it. Going back to it.
I was lucky / unlucky. And unlucky because I had Natalie always talking about impro in my ear. So when in my full hate mode, when I was like, shut up about impro, I will destroy it, you know, that sort of stuff. I hate everything about it. I wouldn't let her talk about it. I would literally get up and leave the room and she talked about it. It was kind of interesting. So you'd have improvisers around and you guys would start chatting and I'd get up and go. I didn't want to talk about it. I wasn't interested. But on the other hand, why that was lucky was
you're committing it to tape.
I know, forever, yeah. What happened to me is I was able to put my toe in bit by bit again, slowly and surely, and listen to what Natalie had to say after a while and not just glean what she was saying and seeing how it changed, seeing what had happened. And Impro Mafia.
Well, you left at a fairly low point too.
Yes.
That was towards the end of the Pig and Whistle days.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
It just ran out of oomph.
Yeah, and
the Impro players had no oomph and the audience had no oomph. And then there were like two people performing in front of five people.
That's right, yeah. That's it exactly. Impro Mafia didn't exist back then. But you guys decided to take it somewhere else, and that's what's pretty impressive. You decided to, hang on, we don't like the hierarchy, we don't want to have... You didn't see the way the ones it had to be run, so you changed it. And so I watched, and I knew you anyway, I mean, I knew you from back then, but I watched, and this is going to sound shockingly arrogant, but prepare yourselves. But you guys got a lot better. And that doesn't mean I wasn't sitting on the mountain waiting for you to climb up the ravine to me. What I mean is, I was on a whole different mountain watching from the distance.
Now that you guys are ready, I'm ready to play
with you.
That's it. It's not like that at all. But what it was, there was things, people had, did get better. I noticed a lot of change in a lot of people. It, to the point where you go, wow, that they're interesting to play with now. And that's the one thing, not a skill level thing. It's, well, who they are as people, who I am as a person maybe as well. Mm. More than maybe, definitely.
Well, I remember I every week at that Pig and Whistle show, I'd get to the end of the night and sit down and think to myself, why the hell do I do this? Mm. And it was lucky that my memory was of about 6 days, because then Monday would come along and go, oh, impro. I like impro. Yeah. I'll go do that.
It was hard. Well, Natalie ran that one, and I helped her run it. So it's one of those things, we both caretook it. We were like caretakers in the worst possible way. We didn't have any power over it, and it wasn't ours to change.
Mm.
And so it wasn't that we didn't have ownership. We had a very small mandate, a tiny mandate to work in, because it belonged to...
Sit down.
Sit down, yeah. Sit down's a little...
Because that was what the old... Theatre Sports Rookie Show.
That's right.
Turned into.
And they went, oh, look, you can look after that because Kirsten's not running anymore and they're not going to run it anymore. So Natalie took it over and I helped.
Because the hub closed down.
Mm.
And it was like 10 months or something before you guys started up at the Pig and Whistle.
That's
again.
Right, finding venues and things. But a lot of people said, oh, why don't you change this and why don't you change that? And in the end it was because, well, it's not ours to change. And at the end of the day, we said, might be right or wrong, we went, well, why would we put so much effort into something that we don't own? At the end of the day, that someone can come, the person, the rightful owner can walk back in at any point and say, oh, I'll have it back, thanks. You don't commit to something like that.
Mm.
I didn't commit to something like that. For me, it was something I did once a week. It was fine. Now, with Impro Mafia, I'm more willing to commit to it because you own it. And you mm-hmm. guys, I mean, you could pull it out from under my feet, but you guys could, well, I don't know, you know what I mean, Wade.
At the moment, that's not really a problem. It's like, Greg, we're just playing short, please. I know you said you didn't want to play, but please.
Love, I mean, it's nice to be wanted, but you get a phone call, you're doing an exam the next day, your last exam for the semester at university. It's a really important exam, a 70% exam, and you get a phone call from Wade Robinson. Well, no, Natalie gets a phone call from Wade going, I'm not calling your house for any reason, but we're down 3 players. Do you know anyone who can play? Anyone? Anyone?
Anyone you could withhold sexual favours to.
So I went, oh, yes, I'll play Natalie. And you hear Wade. Hear Natalie. He'll play. You hear Wade going, oh, I didn't even think of Greg. Like, yeah, sure. Whatever, dude. But it was fine. It all turned out well.
That was a fun day. I must have got like 4 phone calls from Wade just ringing up to freak out at me. Not to ask for my advice about anything. Just go, well, we've still only got 3 players. I was thinking maybe we could go with this person. Like, maybe I could take this course of action, or maybe I could take this course of action. And I'd say, both of those courses of action are very good ideas. And he'd go, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, bye.
Gotta go do some courses of action. That's the funny thing with that was you have to get 6 players. That's one of those beautiful moments. You go, no, you don't. It's really weird. You could have 4 players. Why not?
Oh, he was considering that.
Two teams of 2. My God. Only 2 players that have to work together with other 2 players? How can this be done? He's a lovely man, and we love him.
But I also wanted to offer about 10 months.
Oh, did you? I've not just Basil.
Yeah, at the Pig and Whistle, actually. I got to the point where I was like, I'm not enjoying this, and I hate the people who run it.
That's fair enough. They were bastards.
They suck. And, and so I was away for 10 months. Mm. For 10 months, I diligently put to learning how to do hip-hop dancing.
Nice. Couldn't tell us.
It's quite fun because it was... Because hip-hop dancing is one of those things that I'm just... There are a couple of things I'm just naturally not competent at all.
Well, no offense, Dan, but you're probably the whitest white man I've ever met.
Oh, I'm lanky.
That's right.
I'm lanky. I'm like a... I'm like a whole...
You're Captain White.
I move like a 100 grasshoppers in a sack.
I was going to say, a whole lot of bones in some sort of flour bag, yeah.
So I was very happy by the end of that, that 12 months, that I actually wasn't quite as embarrassing on the dance floor as when I started. So I was like, wow, practice, you can do anything.
That's really, yes, that's true.
But then I ended up coming back to impro when you guys went overseas. I'm like, have they gone? Okay, I'm coming back to
We can buy shirts now.
We can buy shirts.
That was funny. I still laugh at that today. It's like, dear listeners, there was this thing where they're like, we have to have shirts, Natalie and Greg. It's like, why? Like, we must have shirts. You don't understand. But we didn't understand it later, this underground swelling of hate over the fact we wouldn't even organize shirts. We must have shirts that say Pig and Whistle on them. It's like, oh, look, we're not going
to
do that.
I think everyone was just looking to the halcyon days when the amount of effort that you guys put into organising the show resulted in things like giant cardboard dodecahedrons.
Oh, God, yes.
Giant D20 dice.
Yeah, that's true.
Picking games.
That was funny. Yeah, huge props. Funny, everyone.
But, yeah, because we were looking to make the show a bit more... or they were looking. Don't look at me. I didn't have nothing to do with it. I was gone. But they were looking to make the show a bit more professional, I think, because it was in a fully lit room and it had small audiences and small amounts of players who weren't really enjoying themselves. It needed something to change. So Wade bought some shirts while you guys were overseas and you went, what?
Yes, that's funny.
You used our money to buy costumes when we said not to?
It was pretty funny. There was a coup, ladies and gentlemen.
When I get home.
We were gone for 3 months, 2 months, 8 weeks, whatever it was. Yeah, it was quite funny. It was this thing of...
I think it was you were gone 3 days before the shirts.
Yeah, I know.
We bought shirts.
You know, and then, wasn't that the one rule we specifically said not to do? Yeah, I know. We totally ignored you. Oh, cool.
And then, it's impro. You're not supposed to listen to the rules.
Oh, my God. Bloodless coup. And that's why, dictators, you don't leave the country, because the bastards come in behind you and cut you off at the knees.
But apparently it only just came out recently that the only reason that Wade did that without asking you guys was because he was working in Jeans West at the time.
Yep.
And suddenly he found a whole bunch of shirts that were all the same color that were being thrown out for $4 each.
Oh, I see.
So he bought a whole stack of shirts, but it set him back like $44.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you guys found out about that. You were like, what the hell?
No.
Hundreds of dollars? No, we need that for our drug habit.
Well, no, other money must have got spent. Oh, I don't know. I know when we came back, the kitty was dry. Not that the kitty was ever big, but it was a couple $100. It all just went. Like, what did you spend that on? It's like, we spent it on party hats. Okay. It was one of those weird moments. Once again, look, this is neither here nor there.
This is ancient history.
This is ancient history. And this is the important thing as well, is the good thing that came out of that for all of us was Improv Mafia. And then it stopped belonging to someone else. It started belonging to the people who could control it. And now, looking where it is, it's the other white meat sort of thing. You know, it's the choice you can make. Another choice, which Brisbane desperately needed, though there's been... Well, from my opinion anyway, from my point of view, there's been a bit of argy-bargy about that, Brisbane being too small and you can't possibly have this many companies, etc. But you go, no, you can. And Improv Mafia proves that you can because they offer a different product and a different way of doing it. Some people pay money. Some people go, we give you this much money and we get this talent in. And some people say, I run a troupe and they have a set number of troupe players. And Improv Mafia says, we have a team of players who you can pick. And the best thing about that is you can have three shows running at once, all of pretty high caliber that people want to come and see. And that's pretty strange. I think it's strange in Brisbane Impro. Well, it's strange for the last 10 years. Something new and interesting. So, hey, something must be done right. That's why I came back. Because I went, well, I'm not going to come back and stick my foot in it. I'm not going to come back and go, oh, you've done really well. Now I'll tell you how to do it properly. You know, it wasn't like that. It was like, well, I'm going to come back and let you continue doing that thing that you do. And that's really good. I really enjoyed being back doing it again. And some days you come away going, wow, that was really bad improv, but really entertaining. And some days it's both, and that's good too. And some days, which are the best ones for me, is when you go, it wasn't entertaining at all, but it was really good improv.
It was technically proficient.
It was. And then that thing where you go, wow, I actually did something there that I've never done before, and the audience did not get a second of it, and you know, you get the big horn or whatever, which you always laugh through, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing annoys the audience more than laughing at their hate. That's always good.
And time! You have been listening to Greg Rowbottom, who has a blog, but it's secret, so you'll never find it.
That's right. I dare you, try and find it.
My rarely updated website is at invisiblespiders.com. For news about impro in Brisbane, go to impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for And Time is rather ashamedly provided by CivicNet Web Design.
Can't hear it at all, or
I can hear it. Like I can hear it very well, but it's going in there, and it's a very small waveform.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
But I think that's because we've got deeper voices.
Ooh.
When Nat's on there, it's like.